So could these high prices help us?
I would have preferred a gradual adjustment.
High prices help us.
Peter Schiff for Butler on Business. I'd like to thank everyone in Atlanta for listening to this recording of the Schiff Report. To find out more about my investment strategies, visit my website at www.europac.net. That's EUROPAC.net.
Well, the big news on the week was the coordinated central bank rescue of the Eurozone or the Euro. At least that's the way it was reported. Major central banks from the Federal Reserve through others reduced their interest rates by 50 basis points on U.S. dollar swaps. What this does is increase the supply of dollars in global circulation. This is billed as a bailout for Europe. I think it was a bailout for the banks. Yes, some of the banks are in Europe, but some of the banks are also here in America. It's not a coincidence that the morning this policy was announced followed the evening where Standard & Poor's came out and downgraded 20 major banks. They did that on Tuesday after the markets closed. On Wednesday, before the markets opened, this bailout was announced. Two of the banks downgraded were Bank of America and Morgan Stanley. And in fact, if you look at the way these stocks were trading, particularly Bank of America, I think it was set to really get hammered. And so I think this was another bank bailout disguised as an economic policy similar to a QE2. The results is not going to be more economic growth. It's not going to change anything, really, in Europe. The solvency problems that are in Europe still exist, even if you make dollars more plentiful and more cheap. All this is more inflation. It's throwing a lifeline to the banks, but it's strangling the real economy with that same rope. You know, a lot of the criticism of Europe and the ECB, particularly coming out of the United States, is that they're too tight, that the mistake they're making is not following the example set by the Federal Reserve, that they should just have more money printing, more easing. Well, the Federal Reserve set the wrong example. The fact that Europe is resisting going down that road is one thing that you can at least credit them for and credit Germany and the ECB. So the real success in Europe is going to be measured by their ability not to succumb to political expediency and the pressure from politicians to monetize away these problems. Because when you do that, you get bigger problems, which is exactly what the U.S. is going to find. So to the extent that the ECB, with Germany's help, can remain resolute, then what will happen is rather than just a bunch of money printing, nations are going to be forced, governments in more particularly, are going to be forced to cut government spending because the central bank refuses to monetize that spending instead. That would be a good thing for Europe. That's what we should have done. Unfortunately, we did not do that. So I think the real result of this policy, more inflation, a weaker dollar, even though the dollar didn't drop precipitously as a result of this announcement, it did decline. The price of gold rallied. Gold stocks were up. Oil finished the week above $100 a barrel. I think more signs of inflation are going to be continue to be evident. Meanwhile, you know, we also got some big economic news on Friday. We got the much anticipated non-farms payroll numbers. The U.S. economy in the month of November created 120,000 jobs. The bigger number, I think, was the unemployment number that dropped from 9% to 8.6. That is the lowest rate of unemployment that we've had in a few years. Of course, President Obama is going to take that number and run with it to show that his policies are working. I think what's really going on is Christmas is here and you got a lot of temporary hiring. I think people who had part-time jobs were now given full-time jobs. And I think some people that had no jobs at all maybe got temporary jobs associated with the Christmas holiday. And of course, half of the drop in the unemployment rate can be explained by people leaving the labor force. The labor force shrunk. If you look at labor force participation, it dropped from 74.2 to 74. So half of the unemployment rate is simply the result of unemployed people no longer looking for jobs because they're no longer part of the labor force. And of course, a lot of the people that got these jobs, these temporary jobs, or a lot of people who had temporary jobs that now have full-time jobs. Of course, when the holiday season is over in January, I would expect those jobs to disappear. In the meantime, those jobs are not evidencing economic growth. The fact that we hired people to help distribute foreign-made merchandise to American consumers is not economic growth. Remember, we're going to go into debt dramatically over the next month to buy up all this stuff that we've imported. You know, you look at all the pictures we saw of the people in the malls on Black Friday, the people shopping online on Cyber Monday. None of this is economic growth. We're simply spending money that we had to borrow to buy things that we didn't produce. Yes, it temporarily boosts the GDP, but it permanently boosts our debt. And that's really what's going on. The real economic growth is taking place in the countries that are producing all the stuff that we're trampling on each other to buy. Meanwhile, you know, we created these jobs. We created 120,000 new jobs in the service sector. We lost manufacturing jobs in the month of November. So we are creating new consumers, but not new producers. The people have these jobs. They're going to get a paycheck. But what are they going to do with it? They can't buy things made here because we're not making more things. So they take those paychecks and they spend it on imported goods, and it runs up the trade deficit. That's bad for the economy. That subtracts from GDP. That makes a weaker dollar. So all we are doing is exacerbating the very economic imbalances that lie at the heart of our structural problems. We are not solving them with these jobs. The types of jobs that we need to create are precisely the jobs that we're losing. We need more goods-producing jobs, not simply goods-consuming jobs. As far as how the markets reacted to all of this news, you know, on Wednesday, the Dow was up almost 500 points. I think it was 490 points. That was the biggest one-day gain, I think, since early 2009, when you had, you know, the Dow had collapsed, and then it had some pretty big rallies. But of course, this huge gain on Wednesday, which was the day of this bank rescue by the Fed and other central banks, it followed the worst Thanksgiving week in the U.S. stock market since 1932. So we certainly had a big sell-off in the market. There were a lot of shorts that for some reason were surprised by this announcement. I don't know why anyone would be surprised by bank bailouts and money printing. That's what we've been doing. That's the playbook. That's the playbook that we're using. So I don't know why people would be surprised, but nonetheless, they were. So I think you had a lot of shorts that covered during that rally. It remains to be seen if we're going to have any more substantial gains built on that rally. I would say that it is somewhat of a game changer in the minds of a lot of people, a la QE2, in that the central banks are panicking. They are reacting to the weakness in the stock market, the weakness in the banks, just the way they did in 2009, 2008, with money printing, with bailouts. And so we could have rallies in the stock market. I don't think, you know, it's going to be off to the races, new record highs, but we could be trending higher because of this. But it's not just stocks that are going to go up. It's everything. And if stock prices go up, but commodity prices go up faster, but oil prices go up faster, gold prices go up faster, is anybody benefiting from rising stock prices? Yes, you have more money in the stock market, but you need even more money if you want to spend your dividends or if you want to sell your stocks and buy the things that you really want. See, nobody wants stocks because they want stocks. They want stocks because they want to spend the money they get from their dividends or from the capital gains when they sell their stocks. But if all the things they want to buy are getting more expensive than the things they own, they're actually getting poorer, even as the government and Wall Street try to pretend that they're getting richer.
Hi, it's Peter Schiff again. Thanks to Butler on Business for sharing my latest market views. Be sure to visit Europac.net for more exclusive analysis and to help you navigate the dollar's ongoing decline. Have a profitable day.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter Schiff. It is Saturday, December 3rd, 2011. Well, the big news on the week was the coordinated central bank rescue of the Eurozone or the Euro. At least that's the way it was reported. Major central banks from the Federal Reserve through others reduced their interest rates by 50 basis points on U.S. dollar swaps. What this does is increase the supply of dollars in global circulation. This is billed as a bailout.
Biz 1190 brings you breaking news, earnings reports, and market updates when you need it most. Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Dave Wilson.
When you need it most.
Weekday afternoons at 3 on Biz 1190. Streaming to your smartphone on biz1190.com. Have you logged on to biz1190.com lately?
The internet is full of neat stuff.
Our all-new website has everything you need to know about Biz 1190's program. biz1190.com. Plus, financial news and information updated 24/7. biz1190.com. And all the charts and graphs that we money geeks can't live without.
Come on, people. Let's make some green.
It's all for you at biz1190.com. biz1190.com. From the station that's always right on the money, biz1190. When your need to know affects your bottom line, keep it tuned to Biz 1190. Business radio from the heart of Atlanta's financial district. We're the one and only Biz 1190. Streaming around the clock at biz1190.com. We're always right on the money.
This is the Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Karen Moscow. Clearing out the shadow inventory of properties in foreclosure is key to turning the housing market around. But Lori Goodman, analyst at Amherst Securities Group, says that becomes difficult when qualifying for a mortgage has become so hard.
Essentially, what we've done is, at a time when we have a lot of shadow inventory, we've made it very, very hard for borrowers to get mortgages, which basically means your borrower base is very limited.
Goodman says one of her solutions for dealing with the overhang is bulk sales to investors.
What that will do is bulk sales will trade to investors. Investors will rent those properties out, and you can have a minimum holding period of say 3 years for 80% of the properties or whatever. But it will help clear the shadow inventory.
Goodman says clearing the shadow inventory will be a 5-year process. She said home prices are going to fall more in that time period. That's the Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Karen Moscow.
Where's my PC desktop?
It's on my desk, of course.
It's also on my smartphone.
My laptop.
My notebook.
As the engines of a smarter planet,
we mid-sized businesses need to be able to work anytime, anywhere.
Wherever I go, my desktop goes with me.
Unless I'd prefer that it didn't.
Like when I'm fishing or something.
The IBM Virtual Desktop for smart business. Designed to reduce desktop management costs. Starting at $12.50 per user per month. Learn more at ibm.com/engines/desktop. Prices subject to change without notice.
For Margaret, we shared a newspaper in a thunderstorm. We raised 3 amazing children. We sang at the piano until the neighbors complained. So here's to making the next 30 years as wonderful as the first. Love, Adam.
When you give the gift of New York Life, you give the most selfless gift of all. New York Life Insurance Company can help you plan a secure retirement so you can spend your retirement years the way you deserve. Contact your New York Life agent or visit us at newyorklife.com.
Today, more than ever, what happens over there affects you right here at home. Keep it tuned to Biz 1190 for financial updates around the clock from around the world. We're Atlanta's new Biz 1190.
Try to look at it from my side, will you? You see, you broke the law. Now, let me finish. Now, it's from little misdemeanors that major felonies grow.
Welcome back to Butler on Business. My name is Alan Butler. The Dow is up 150. The S&P is up 20.
We are joined on the phone now by Dr. Ileana Johnson. She taught economics as a college professor for 30 years, and Dr. Johnson recently published a book about her 20-year experience in communist Romania entitled Echoes of Communism. She's a regular guest on the show, and we're happy to have her back.
Ileana, how you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm fine. How are you?
Fine. Jason has you down for pushing back the socialist agenda in education, but I want to get you on again quickly to talk about this article you wrote on the super committee and all of that. I actually enjoyed that article.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you watched a National Geographic Thanksgiving special that caught your attention over the holiday week. How so?
Yes, it was. As I was growing up, I loved National Geographic, and this particular program had extremely strong environmentalist language, and as it progressed, it got worse. And when it got to the word biological imperialism, I thought, well, I have to write about this. They were presenting the landing of the Pilgrims in Jamestown and how they have overfished and overforested and completely deforested the land and causing biological imperialism. And also when they brought their seeds of wheat, they have brought weeds with them like dandelion, and that was definitely biological imperialism in their opinion. And I thought, wait a minute, what if the wind carries the seeds of these plants and weeds over large swaths of land, is that still biological imperialism? So these ridiculous statements that have really no backing with scientific data upset me, because impressionable children hear this and they believe everything they hear. They look up to authority. And, of course, National Geographic is authority, and the teacher in the classroom is authority. And so I can see how these frightening, made-up scenarios could scare the children into believing this man-made global warming.
Well, this messaging is certainly not unique just to National Geographic. You gave another example, the Channel One News. I don't think a lot of people really understand the one-sided worldview that they're given through a lot of these outlets.
You're right. When my children were small, and I used to go to their classroom quite a bit, Channel One News was part of the curriculum, and most of the presenters represented the left side of the political spectrum, and parents had no idea what their children were watching. I knew because I visited the school so often. So I decided to peruse Channel One News recently, and I found out things that really upset me, representing, again, just the left side of the political spectrum and pushing Revolution Earth and environmentalism and hate speech and presenting various videos that were extremely one-sided and basically presenting everybody who disagrees with the leftist point of view or the environmentalist point of view as a hate monger. And that really upset me. And there were videos like, you know, I'm a foreigner, I'm a naturalized citizen, and of course our country was created with immigrants, but they had a video on National Hispanic Heritage Month, which it's not really a bad idea. That was in September 15, October 15, but they were celebrating the anniversaries of independence of Chile, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Mexico. And I thought, do we really need to have a whole month to celebrate the independence of South American countries? How about celebrating the independence of our own country? And this kind of flies in the face of our founding fathers' principles of unity, because these videos were presenting that diversity is paramount. Well, diversity has been proven time and time again in Europe that it has failed, and we had Chancellor Angela Merkel say so a few months ago, and even President Sarkozy of France saying that diversity programs have failed miserably. Under teaching tools, they were talking about the history of hate, our disposable lives, the Mexican drug cartels, and they were all slanted, that if you dislike someone or disagree with someone or dislike something, you are presented as a hateful person.
Well, one thing that I wanted to talk to you specifically about was a textbook now that's being used for middle school age children in American history classes. The textbook is titled Our Living Constitution Then and Now, and it had some alarming quotes from that book that you point out in this article.
Yes, indeed. This just one textbook, which is still in use and it's on sale online, is called Our Living Constitution Then and Now, and it's used for grades fifth through eighth in American history classes. And a direct quote from it says that rights are special privileges the government gives you. You're also given the right to choose a religion, end of quote. The government does not give you a right. You have a God-given right. Another quote, the Bill of Rights lists the freedoms given to citizens. Actually, the Bill of Rights lists the freedoms that are in the Constitution. Another quote, because the government gives you rights, we have the duty to be good citizens. But what does it mean to be a good citizen? How can you be a part of giving back for the freedom you have? End of quote. Well, again, the government does not give us rights, and we are not required to give back restitution for our rights. The fallacies and the falsehoods in this book alone are astonishing, and there are thousands of books like this out there.
Well, more and more parents, I think, are starting to realize that maybe this indoctrination that their children are getting in the classrooms of the public schools are not in the best interest of their children, and they're turning to alternatives like homeschooling. But there's also pushback against parents that are choosing to homeschool their kids as well.
Absolutely. And there was a particular professor, Robin West, from Georgetown Law Center, who has made fallacious and uninformed arguments against homeschooling. And some of these arguments were that most homeschool children have fundamentalist Protestant parents who teach their kids nothing but the Bible, which is not true. Homeschool children are at higher risk for child abuse. That is also not true. Other harms justify strict regulation of homeschooling, including curriculum reviews and invasive home visits. It's also not true. And that it was a crime to keep children home from school until 30 years ago. That is a true statement. Now, none of our founding fathers went to public schools, and we know that after 1979, when the Department of Education was founded, the scores and the performance of students has gone downhill. But I have found evidence that homeschooled children represent every demographic imaginable, from pagans, atheists, lower-income people, upper-income people, conservatives, liberals, PhDs, GEDs. There was a doctoral student named Jeremy Ucker from the University of Texas who conducted a nationwide phone survey in 2008, and he found, quote, found very little effect of homeschooling on any aspect of adolescents' religious views. And I found another quote that only 17% of suspected abuse reports are submitted by education personnel. So children are not any more endangered if they are in homeschooling than in a regular public school. So public school advocates, all the educational people on the left, the academia, and all the Marxists, they want social engineering of our children. And I recognize it because I grew up under communism for 20 years, and I have seen all these tired, worn-out communist little catch buzzwords. It's nothing but social reconstruction, as Dewey of the Dewey cataloging system has dreamed up, which is well known in the circles of communism. And we also know that textbooks are generally written by college professors who have leftist views, and they slant history in the direction of their view with sometimes total disregard for historical accuracy. We have an effort in Prince William County in the state of Virginia to review all textbooks for accuracy of content, and we found out that there are 11 other states across the country that either have completed or are doing textbook reviews. So that's good news.
Well, Dr. Johnson, let's say that there are parents out there that are either homeschooling their children or considering homeschooling their children. Are there any good resources out there that you would point them to?
Absolutely. The one that I found most recently that I really, really like is promoted by the New Renaissance in Education, NRIE, which I quote, promotes a curriculum to teach America's heritage to the next generation, liberty and limited government, America's documents, America's cultural heritage, free market economics, and Western intellectual tradition, end of quote. And if you go to their website, they have entire curriculums that can be purchased from their site and their wonderful resources.
Ileana, are you going to be available to talk to us again later in the week?
Absolutely. I would love to talk about the other topic that you like.
Well, yes. I thought that was a very well-written article, and I'd like to get you on as the week progresses to discuss that.
Certainly. The Fed banking and the Eurozone are very important.
Well, listen, we appreciate you calling us today.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
I look forward to talking to you later in the week.
Thank you.
This is Alan Butler. Jason and I will be back with Chris Markowski on the other side of this break. And as we leave this segment, the Dow is up 146 to 12,165. The NASDAQ is up 40 to 2,666. And the S&P is up 19 or 1.5% to 12,63. The dollar is gaining some of its loss back. It's down about 0.4%. We'll see in a couple minutes.
Biz 1190 Traffic.
It's the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. Good morning. I'm Chris Monroe. There's a brush fire in Forsyth County. It's forced authorities to shut down Highway 369, Matt Highway, around Hightower Circle, McBrayer Road, and Mount Tabor Road. Expect to be detoured and delayed in that area. Expressways are good, though, from the suburbs into downtown on 75, 85, 400, and I-20 from all sides of Metro Atlanta. Traffic moving well, no outbound delay either. 285 around the perimeter, earlier trouble gone on the northbound interloop before Hollowell. Still a little slow traffic perhaps coming up through I-20 on the west side, but that's about it. Downtown connector is okay. I'm Chris Monroe with the Traffic Command Center. Overcast, 61 degrees. We'll check the forecast right after this.
Hi, this is Alan Butler, and I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Jim Thomas with Onsite Shine.
Hi, I'm Jim with Onsite Shine. We are a personalized detailing service based in Atlanta, Georgia. And when you're going out and taking that client to a meeting, it is important to have your car looking its very best. We're completely mobile, which means we bring our own water, electricity, and environmentally safe products in order to detail your cars, boats, or planes.
For personalized hand wash, exterior and interior detail, or full detail, contact Onsite Shine.
Why leave work early just to get your car washed when you can have someone come directly to your office or your home and care for your car right then and there?
Call today for current specials, 678-714-2598.
Who wants to go to their lake house and waste time cleaning their boat? We are able to clean, detail, and provide affordable services, including winterization, for any boat right here on any lake here in Georgia.
678-714-2598. That's Onsite Shine.
That's Onsite Shine. Onsite Shine.
It's game day. You've got all weekend to study.
Jen, this has nothing to do with studying. I've got to work. The way the economy is, I figure I'll be working for the next century just to pay off these student loans.
Well, you know...
I know. You joined the National Guard, so your college is completely paid for. Yes, you've mentioned it a couple thousand times.
The National Guard Scholarship covers up to 100% of your tuition. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Georgia National Guard. Aired by the Georgia Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This time, let's get it right. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Somehow the mainstream media believe they have a say in choosing the Republican nominee for president. Up to conservatives to make their voices heard, so Town Hall and Hot Air have created a national GOP primary. Voting begins the morning of December the 13th, closes the afternoon of December the 15th. Townhall.com and HotAir.com are the number one conservative online destination, so speak for yourself by logging on to TownhallPrimary.com and registering for the national GOP primary. TownhallPrimary.com.
The Overhead Door Company of Atlanta has been serving the Metro Atlanta area since 1935. You can trust them. They perform criminal background checks and drug screenings on all their employees. They're available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year for your convenience. Over 100 professional and highly trained service and installation technicians, and they will be there when you need them. And the Overhead Door Company of Atlanta does not send subcontractors to your door, but actual employees. They service and repair all brands of garage doors and openers. Their residential service is available Monday through Saturday until 8 p.m. You can call them anytime for same-day service. The Overhead Door Company of Atlanta. Check out their website, overheaddooratlanta.com, or you can call them at 404-872-3667. You can also click the sponsors tab on bobandrodman.com. That's 404-872-3667 or overheaddooratlanta.com.
Cloudy today and tonight. It'll be mild, high getting up to 67 today, down to 57 tonight, mid-60s with some showers and a thunderstorm tomorrow, then rain and chillier up to 58 on Wednesday. I'm AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeVore for Biz 1190.
I want fire placed on that hill, as much fire as possible.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to Butler on Business. On the phone with us now is Chris Markowski. Chris is the president of Markowski Investments. He's a political and economic expert, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host, and he's the guru behind the watchdog on Wall Street. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you. The double secret $1 trillion bailout. What is it?
Well, I don't know if you saw this last week. It actually gave a real big boost to the markets. And obviously, you know, a lot of this stuff gets hush-hushed or, you know, it's a little bit too complicated for the evening news. They don't want to get into topics that are too complicated because then, they can't explain them in sound bites. But the Federal Reserve basically came out and said, and along with the other central banks, said that we're going to basically backstop Europe. In the sense that we're going to be able to provide them liquidity as they need it, so they can their banks can continue to fund their businesses and keep everything running and moving and grooving over there,
and primarily so that their banks can pay back our banks. So it's another bank bailout.
For lack of a better phrase, it basically also kind of gave Europe another 10 to 15 days to try to figure out the mathematics and what they're going to do or how they're going to go about handling things next. And it was definitely, yeah, you're right. It was another bank bailout. I mean, you talk about, it was a story a couple of weeks ago. It's unfortunate that this one didn't get a lot of press. The amount of money that the Fed gave to banks at the same time TARP was done, over $1 trillion, and the profits that were made based upon that. I mean, let's be honest here. I want to declare myself a bank holding company. I really do, because I want to be able to go borrow money for nothing. And you know, to be able to go to a bank and borrow billions of dollars for nothing, I mean, how do you not make money?
Some of them seem not to. But, yes, you're right. It's a great business model. Get them to print up money, give you free money, and it's a great business model.
Especially when you're paying your depositors and those, the people out there that are conservative with their money and they want to put some money into a savings account or a CD, and you're giving them nothing. You can get money for nothing, and then you turn around and you can lend it out at much higher rates. Now, granted, you can go and get a mortgage at a decent rate now, and most people can go out there and borrow money at better rates than many European countries can. But even this, you understand something, that they made billions of dollars in profits basically on the Fed printing money. This is a fundamental disconnect, and when you don't price risk accordingly, this is when you get bubbles. This is when you have problems occur. This is what happened in Europe. It's what happened here in the United States when people were allowed to have money that shouldn't have had that money.
Chris, you mentioned that this most recent bailout or most recent action, coordinated effort, if you will, by the central banks bought Europe maybe another 10, 15 days. Is anything going to fundamentally change in the next 2 weeks?
That's the billion-dollar, if not trillion-dollar question. The size of what's going on over in Europe, the sovereign debt problem there, you want to contrast that here. I mean, we had a problem here, obviously, with housing, and that was a major issue here. But you're talking 10, 20 times the size in regards to the sovereign debt problem that they have over in Europe. And once again, it's not houses. This is sovereign debt. Italy this past weekend really pushed forward some, you know, pretty incredible austerity cuts there. I think, you know, today you see some of the comments coming from, you know, Merkel and Sarkozy, and they basically are saying Greece is going to be the exception because Greece basically lost cause. There's just no way. They're in basically debt serfdom. Many Americans willingly put themselves in debt serfdom, but you're going to have nations now in debt serfdom. There's just no way they're going to be able to get out from under the hole that they're in unless they default. Europe's hoping that they're not going to have too many countries that have to go through that. And I hope that we don't have to go through that here as a nation down the road. But that's going to involve some sacrifice on our part as well very, very soon.
Chris, let's switch gears and talk about those misleading unemployment statistics.
Well, it's amazing. I think we need to call up and we need to redo the X-Files. We need to bring Mulder and Scully back because over 300,000 people went missing last month.
At least. And, you know, I will say for the first time in recent memory, the news media has begun to not quite totally unveil the curtain or what's behind the curtain, but they at least, I think for the first time, figured out something wasn't quite right with those government numbers.
You had jobless claims on Thursday above 400,000. And all of a sudden, you got unemployment number at 8.6%. You got a labor participation rate at 64%. Yeah, what happened to those 300,000 plus people? They gone missing. I said, you're going to have to put a lot of people on the side of milk cartons really soon because this is nuts. I hope that people are starting to wake up to the, you know, how the government does these numbers and calculates this stuff. But this is a joke. We haven't improved. It isn't getting better. You get more people just up and quitting and saying, you know what, I'm throwing my hands up in the air. I'm just going to go out there and get on the government dole. I mean, this is horrible.
Yeah, I think it's blatantly obvious to anybody who's maybe not an Ivy League economist or a politician. If you talk to anybody on the streets, if you walk down and look at just what the average person's having to deal with right now, the 8.6% unemployment headline number, it's laughable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Assessment that the media didn't jump all over it, and you know they're starting to see, you know, they can't push that line anymore. It's not believable to Americans anymore, and because how is this? People are starting to take a look a little bit harder at things rather than take things from what the government is telling them, and that to me that's a good sign. That's a good sign. You get more and more people awake, you know, starting to turn their eyes away from the shadows in the cave and into the light. That's a great thing.
Well, Chris, the continued modest employment gains are really nothing but phantom because the workforce has actually grown, yet the number of employed has shrunk. We have fewer people today employed than we did at the onset of the 2001 recession. We have fewer people employed today than we had at the onset of the 2007 recession, yet the population and the size of the workforce has grown 10%. It's frustrating to me that the news media generally lets all this kind of stuff go unreported.
Well, yeah, but the one good thing about the report, it was the fact that the household number was better. But what I think is happening, and this is basically from talking to the people all over the country, I do business with a lot of small business owners around the country. First and foremost, they don't want to put people on their books. They don't want to have to, hire people and be accountable for that person. I think a lot of small businesses out there are going to people and saying, hey, you know what, go get your own S-Corp, go form your own limited, partnership, whatever it may be, and I'm going to pay you as an independent contractor. Small businesses around the country are frightened at the fact that they don't know what they're going to get hit upside the head with next. I mean, Obamacare was a large smack. It's a huge cost. And we live in a day and age right now where we have these legislatures that are unelected legislators. We have all of these regulators out there that are telling us what we can and cannot do. Now, you take a look at what happened in South Carolina with the Boeing situation. Who's to say that the Labor Department's not going to come out and make some sort of rule in regards to, how long you have to keep people on and what it's going to cost you if you fire people? They could do it. And small business owners know this. It's a huge risk for a small business owner to bring people on. That's why they're small businesses. So they're going to say, you know what, I'm not going to deal with this risk. If I got to bring people on, I'm going to have to hire independent contractors. And whether or not these contractors actually, you know, record whether or not that they're going to pay their Social Security taxes, their FICA, they're going to do all this stuff, that's up in the air. There's not going to be enough IRS agents to keep track of all this stuff. But this is what happens when you have cumbersome, burdensome regulations that's holding the economy back.
Chris Guy, it is always a pleasure having you on the show. We look forward to the next time. This is Chris Markowski, president of Markowski Investments, political and economic expert, and he is the watchdog on Wall Street. And lately, he's been the watchdog on the folks up there in Washington, D.C. as well. Chris, we appreciate it, guy.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you. This is Alan Butler. Jason and I will be back for our final segment on the other side of this break.
Georgia, oh, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Your source for financial news. This is Biz 1190, the only station in Atlanta that's down to business. With the information you need to make the most of your money. This is Biz 1190.
H. Stockton, sports coats, suits, and dress shirts. Quality clothing, selection, comfort, and lasting service in Atlanta for decades. Dress trousers, ties, and shoes. Employees with a personal touch to know and recommend to their customers. Belts, sports shirts, and knit shirts. H. Stockton, where every item is hand-picked. Each fabric is examined for color, weight, and wearing properties. Casual trousers, shorts, and hats. Welcoming the new arrivals of Southern Point Company and Southern Tide. Formal wear, outerwear, and grooming. H. Stockton, with four convenient locations. Lenox Square in Buckhead, Midtown at 14th and Peachtree, Overton Park at Cumberland Boulevard, and Park Place at Ashford Dunwoody, where they also carry fine women's apparel. H. Stockton, serving the Butler men for three generations. Go to hstockton.com. H. Stockton Atlanta since 1963, your assurance of quality and lasting service.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
This is Biz 1190, your source for financial news. From Wall Street to London.
Smashing baby!
To Hong Kong, helping you mind your business. We're Atlanta's own. Biz 1190, streaming at biz1190.com.
General Pickett, sir, you must look to your division.
General Lee. I have no division.
Welcome back to the final segment of today's edition of Butler on Business. Jason, you know, we're just days away from the beginning of 2012. And one of history's most famous and foreboding doomsday predictions, the end of the world according to the Mayan calendar, appears to be a prediction that was never made by the Mayans. So I thought we could get into that. But first, let's tell you who the Mayans are before I depart and start it at the top. Even though it is widely accepted that the Mayan calendar says the world comes to an end on December 21st, 2012, Mayan authorities say no. They don't know where that one got started. But the ancient Mayan lived in the Yucatan around 2600 B.C. By 250 A.D., they were at the peak of their power. Now, not a whole lot is known about the old ancient Mayans, because when the Spaniards showed up, they basically destroyed all their books and pretty much wiped a lot of information about the ancient Mayans off the map. So it has taken archaeologists a long time to assemble their history. The Maya had no central king ruling their huge empire. Instead, there were as many as 20 separate areas, similar to the ancient Greece city-states. Each major city had its own ruler and noble class, supported by smaller cities and the surrounding farms and villages. Now, what I found fascinating about the ancient Maya were they developed the science of astronomy. Now, think about this. 2,600 years before Christ, they had developed the science of astronomy. They had a calendar system, and they had a written alphabet. They were also known for creating elaborate ceremonial architecture, such as pyramids, temples, palaces, and observatories. And these structures were all built without metal tools. The Mayan people were also skilled farmers. In order to farm, they had to clear huge sections of tropical rainforest. Groundwater was scarce in these areas, so they had to build large underground reservoirs to store the rainwater. And keep in mind, this is 2,600 years before Christ. The Maya were skilled weavers and potters. They also cleared routes through the jungles and swamps to create trade routes. This allowed them to sell and trade the goods they had made for goods that they needed. Early bartering system. The Maya writing system was made up of 800 glyphs. Some of the glyphs were pictures and others represented sounds. They chiseled the glyphs into stone and inside codices. Codices were books that were folded like an accordion. The pages were fig bark, covered in a white lime and bound in jaguar skins. The Maya wrote hundreds of these books. They contained information on history, medicine, astronomy, and their religion. And as I mentioned, the Spanish missionaries burned all but four of these books. The ancient Mayans were a very religious people. Mayan actions were based on rituals and ceremonies. The Maya had many different gods. They also had rituals, and one of those rituals was human sacrifice. Did you see the book Apocalypto the movie?
No, I've never seen that one.
Yeah, it's pretty graphic. Well, it has some stuff in there on the ancient Mayans. That was Mel Gibson produced that one. The Maya kings were considered to be direct descendants of the Mayan gods, and many Mayan religion was divided into three parts, with Earth is one part, the level above Earth is another part, and the level below the Earth was the third part. Now, the level above the Earth was like the Christian heaven, and the level below the Earth was considered like the Christian hell. Now, the ancient Maya had a class society. At the top were the nobles and the priests. Their middle class was made up of warriors, craftsmen, and traders. The farmers and workers and slaves were at the bottom. The Mayans wove beautiful fabric and designed musical instruments like horns, drums, and things like that. They also carved huge statues. Archaeologists can tell a great deal about the ancient Maya from their wonderful pottery and clay figures. The art they created honored their leaders, gods, and their daily life. Now, about AD 300 and 900, the major centers of the Mayan civilization were located in three cities. Now, something happened, and these places were mysteriously abandoned. Many theories have been considered, such as disease, invasion by another culture, natural disaster, or the collapse of their trade routes, which would have destroyed their economy. But no one really knows for sure what happened. And as I started off with this, one of history's most famous and foreboding doomsday predictions might never have been made, according to a German researcher. In his interpretation of a 1,300-year-old tablet, that affirms that the ancient Maya regarded December 21st, 2012, as a moment of great importance, but not, as some believe, because they foresaw an apocalypse on that date. Now, centered in the tropical lowlands of what is now Guatemala, the powerful Maya Empire reached the peak of its influence around the 6th century A.D. and collapsed several hundred years later. Along with those impressive stone monuments and elaborate cities, the lost Mesoamerican civilization left behind traces of its sophisticated calendar, which scholars have spent decades trying to decipher. You know, they even built pyramids, Jason. In recent years, popular culture has latched on to the theories that the close of the calendar's current cycle, which is set to occur around December 21st, 2012, corresponds to the end of the world in the Mayan belief system. The first Mayan calendar, known as the calendar round, appears to have been based on two overlapping annual cycles, a 260-day sacred year and a 365-day secular year that named 18 months with 20 days each. You know, just think about this, Jason. Before Christ walked the earth, the Mayans had already figured out that it took us 365 days to circle the sun. That's impressive. Under this system, under their calendar system, each day was assigned four pieces of identifying information: a day number, a day name in the sacred calendar, a day number and month name in the secular calendar. Now, every 52 years counted as a single interval or calendar round, and after each interval, the calendar would reset itself like a clock. But because the calendar round measured time in an endless loop, ancient Mayans couldn't use it to establish chronologies or relate events with wide spans of time between them. Around 300 BC, Priest apparently solved this problem by devising a new method known as the long count, which identified each day by counting forward from a base point calculated to fall on August 11th, 3114 BC. It grouped days into several sets, and a single cycle of the long count calendar lasted what they called 13 baktons, or roughly 5,126 solar years, meaning that it is slated to end on a date correlating to December 21st, 2012. Now, what exactly happens when the long count winds down? For some theorists, hieroglyphs on a 1,300-year-old stone tablet on an archaeological site they found in Mexico might hold the answer. Worn with age and riddled with cracks, it includes a hazy prediction of an event evolving on that day. The Mayan god of creation and war apparently is going to show up and wreak havoc. But this German fella says that's not at all what happened. So that is some controversy. But the ancient Mayans were quite an impressive civilization.
Well, we have a couple impressive guests lined up for tomorrow. We're going to be talking to Robert Mazur. He's the former undercover federal agent and author of The Infiltrator. And we're going to be talking to a local businessman about entrepreneurship.
Well, I look forward to it, Jason. Taylor, I enjoyed it today. This is Alan Butler. As we leave today's show, the Dow is now up 137 points to 12,156. The S&P is up 19 points to 1263. The dollar is down 0.4%. The commodities, I think, Jason, were having a pretty good day. Gold's still down about 0.5%. Silver is flat. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Quitting time! Quitting time!